Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here today talking to Cheryl Critchley, a freelance journalist and Richmond supporter. Not that you should read anything into that, but she's got a lot of experience in terms of writing about women's football and following women's football over the years, so it's a great pleasure for us to have her on the Big Footy podcast today. Hello, Cheryl.
Hi, Jason. How are you going?
Oh, it's hot as hell in Adelaide today, 41 degrees, 41 tomorrow, and you'll get that the day after, so...
Thanks.
That's my gift to you. Cheryl, as you're aware, of course, anyone who's not living under a rock and follows the AFL these days will be aware that the Women's Football League, the AFL Women's Competition, started last weekend, was announced last June. You've been writing about women's football on and off since, 1985, I think, so... How have you seen the changes to get to this point?
Oh, well, it's been a bit of a revolution the last few years because, as you just mentioned, when I was a cadet journalist on the Knox News in Melbourne's outer suburbs in 1985, one of the very first stories that I wrote was about the Ferntree Gully Kangas football team, women's football team, and they were part of the VWFL, which was only about 4 years old at that time, and it was seen as just a complete novelty, and that didn't change for probably the next 20 years. And the women who ran that league did it voluntarily with very little publicity, very little support for many, many years, and it's only really been in the last five that it's taken off, and now that you've got the AFL involved, it's fantastic.
So when you heard that the AFL women's competition had been announced, what were your initial thoughts?
Oh, that it was great because knowing this background and how many women, like legendary players like Debbie Lee and Peter Searle, who, you know, have been playing since the early 1990s and how tough they've done it for so many years. Like they all had voluntary positions, you know, running the league, doing the works. To see all that hard work finally be rewarded by the AFL coming in and giving it resources, it's just amazingly great, like really, really good. The thing is, it just has to be done right, doesn't it?
So, do you think they've done it right? Like, do you think this top-down approach, well, they're not really doing a top-down approach so much as it's a top and bottom approach at the same time, really, isn't it? Because they're changing the grassroots at the same time. You look at some of the stuff coming out of Queensland and the developments in Western Australia recently, and especially in Victoria with the way they're changing how the leagues operate now. It's not just a top-down approach or just a bottom-up approach. They're kind of going, okay, well, it's time to have a league, but we're going to work on the bottom as well. Do you think that approach is right?
Yeah, well, it's sort of a bottom-up approach in the sense that in the last 10 or 15 years, they have introduced the junior competitions. Like girls have been able to do AusKick probably for at least 20 years, but they didn't have their own junior teams. So what they've done in the early 2000s and probably later in the 2000s, they introduced junior girls teams and a youth girls competition, which I think came first for teenage girls. And that was a lead into the VWFL, which was the existing competition. There was only an adult competition, but now you have your full pathway through AusKick, junior girls, youth girls, and the VWFL, and the people at that level who really excel are the ones who have been chosen to play for the AFL sides. So it's not this sudden thing where the AFL's come in and said, right, we're having this elite competition. There's been quite a build-up to it. Like some people are a bit... they're not sort of educated in the background, so they think that all of a sudden they've plucked out this elite competition with no background. But for the last 15 years, the girls have been developing and coming up through the ranks, so it's not this sort of sudden thing.
Is that because the league basically said, oh, look, we were planning to do this in 2020, but we're going to bring it forward? Is that where the perception of it being rushed is coming from, do you think?
Oh, possibly, yeah. But what you've had is there's been a few tireless workers who've been doing this for the last 20 years. And like, say, AFL Victoria, for example, there was a girl who's probably still there, Shiloh Curtis. At least 10 years ago, she was doing all this from the grassroots level and linking in with the AFL to try and build the base for it. And she's, people like her have brought it to the point where it was ready to come in at the elite level. So I think they were ready for it, and bringing it forward doesn't seem to have been a problem given the crowds they've got. The one thing people have commented on is that the skill level, and because you've got a fair few teams, they're saying that it might spread the skill level a bit thin. But once these women start getting paid, if they can train to the level that the men can, their skills will improve really quickly because all of them work full-time or study full-time. They haven't had the time to devote to their skills that the men have.
I think they're allowed 9 hours at the club a week, and under their deal, and they've only been training for 2 months. I mean, the draft was only in October, and they only got together as a club for pre-season training in November. I think essentially they've had what guys would have if they were at an AFL club. They'd have had half a pre-season, and we'd be using that as an excuse for how badly they were playing if that was the case. So I think the skill level judgment is a little bit of a harsh call at this stage. I mean, I see where people are coming from. Yes, there's fumbles here and there, and mind you, there was wet weather in Adelaide and it was bucketing down in Casey. But at the same time, it's about more than just the skill level that applies this weekend. There's a far greater grounding that goes on here and a far greater picture to be seen.
Yeah, well, as Susan Alberti tweeted today or yesterday, the 1897 grand final, I forget who was in it, but the scores were 1-8 to 8 points.
And they'd been playing for 20 years at that point.
Yeah, that's right. And so you've got to start somewhere, and it has come from a base. It's not a sudden thing with no women having played before. So it can only get better. And what we need now is the women to be paid properly so they can devote the time to it that's needed to build the skills up, because they literally cannot do that until they're paid a full-time wage. And I know, you know, there's talk about, well, that, you know, should the AFL be committing that much money to it? But if they want an elite competition, then you're going to have to pay for it, aren't you?
You've got to pay elite wages for elite people. It's the same principle that works in business, I guess. I wonder if part of that is because they're only playing that 8 weeks, the players that are in this competition, they're going to go back to their state competitions and whatever for development purposes for at least the next year or two.
Yeah, and some have come from other sports too. I've interviewed a few that have come from like soccer and basketball, and speed skating was another one. Some of those girls do want to continue with the football, but a part of it will depend on, you know, whether they can do it. If they get enough of a wage, then they can give up their other sport. But if not, then, you know, the basketball might be more attractive and they'll go back to the basketball. So, you know, if you pay them really well, you will attract the best athletes.
Now, as a Richmond supporter, your club obviously failed to make it in or make it past the assessment phase of the women's team competition. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's actually really disappointing because as a fan, you want to go and cheer your team on. And I didn't get to a game last weekend because I had lots on, but this weekend I'm hoping to go to one. But if my team was in it, I'd be there, you know, no matter what. I would go to every Richmond women's game. But when your team's not there as a fan, it's really hard. You're so used to it being there. I think you sort of almost know what the poor old Fitzroy fans were feeling like when they no longer had a team. Now that this really great, exciting competition has started, all of us guys who don't have a team in it, we're sort of like, oh, you know, it's really disappointing.
Do you think it's going to give an unfair advantage to those teams that are already in the competition when the newer ones come in later on down the track, or do you think there's going to be some balancing done by the league?
Well, I suppose it depends how they handle it. Well, they'd probably have to do like what they did when GWS and Gold Coast came in and give, you know, the higher draft picks to the newer clubs, because, you know, the one of the biggest concerns was the more clubs you have, the you know, thinner you're going to spread the talent. Now that you've got eight teams, if you add another two, like, you know, are they going to get elite players, or are they going to get marquee players as well, or have they already all been taken? So that's one of the big issues they've got to look at, isn't it? Because you don't want to spread it too thin to the point where people, you know, will justifiably pick on the skill level.
So with the league introducing the eight teams as it did, do you think that was the right way to go, or should they have done like a BBL style, like general geographic region, or is this the better way to have gone?
Well, yeah, it's a hard one. It's quite predictable what they did because they've got, you know, the interstate teams as well. But I'm not an expert in the level of interest in other states, but I'd imagine there'd be some other states that have teams where there isn't the interest that there is in Melbourne. So if you had a few more teams in Melbourne, then you might have you know, got more interest. But you do have to be fair. It's a national competition, so it does have to be national. So if they expand it, then you can have more teams in Melbourne. But looking at it objectively, it's probably fair what they've done so far.
So big game in big crowds last weekend. I know you were involved with the AFL Fans Association as well. And so big crowds, free entry played a big part, or do you think if they'd charged, it would have made a difference?
I don't reckon it would have made a huge difference, because everyone I knew who was going, a lot of women that I know, they're not massive, massive footy fans, but they were so excited about, I'm going to the footy, I'm going. And they wouldn't have even known whether it was free or not when they made that decision. And the other point is, you know, the men's pre-season games are free if you're a member of a competing team. So if I go to a Richmond pre-season game, I get in for free. Yep. So the men's games are free for a lot of people as well. So, you know, this argument coming out that, oh, they're only going because it's free, well, so are the men's games for a lot of fans. So I reckon people would have turned up if they had to pay. Just the level of excitement has been quite high.
I think there was a sense of occasion this last weekend in particular.
Especially
on that Friday night, where you had so many people coming from all over the place, and there were people from other sports that got locked out as well. And they were commenting on Twitter about it. I mean, there was just so much interest in the occasion. Not even just the match, but the occasion.
And it was very emotional too, because I'm in the age group. I just turned 51. When I was at school, I was a real tomboy. I used to go and kick up, you know, down the street with my brother and my cousins. I had no opportunity to play any football whatsoever. And I clearly remember a grade 6 footy clinic. I think they had VFL players there. The teachers would not let me go in it. I asked. They wouldn't let me be part of this clinic. So my dad, who was a teacher, nicked me a football from his school. And so I had my own footy to kick around. Not one opportunity to do any football-related activity throughout my entire childhood. And the VWFL started when I was 15, and by then I was playing cricket and basketball and a whole heap of other sports. So I never really had the opportunity to play. And seeing these girls go out there, like, I had a tear in my eye. It was just so exciting to see them being able to do that.
I've seen stories this weekend about, well, this past week really, like girls in your position that, like, they'd be playing Auskick or whatever the version was at the time, Vic Kick, or and they'd hit 12 and they'd be, like, end of a training session, their mum is like, well, this is your last one, you can't go back again now. Like,
yeah, you know, well, a lot of them are in that boat.
Off to netball for you.
Yeah, and some of them, footy is their natural game. And a good example is a girl who went to Auskick with my daughter in primary school and kinder and all the way through, Catherine Smith. She was as good as the boys at Auskick, and she is one of the first beneficiaries of the new system, because she was able to then play against the boys in the junior club, but then she played, you know, the teenage girl competition, and now she's been drafted for Melbourne, and she played for Melbourne last Sunday. And it was just absolutely brilliant to see her out there, and her age group, that just turning 18 now, have had that opportunity to play all the way through.
I think it's great. I've been reading today about the Legends Football League, and I think it's great that the women can actually play the men's sport without having to actually demean themselves in the same kind of fashion. We had some comments on Big Footy that turned up about the Legends Football League and how it's so much better than the AFL. But they're not even paid, these women. But they're still playing because it's the only way they can play the sport that they wanted to play, according to the interviews that they had there. So they're having to dress in stupid ways for a contact sport because it's the only way they can play the sport that they want at the level they want to play it at. And get this, you know, and I'm so glad that we've been able to pull this off at the AFL level without having to resort to gimmicks and things like that. So,
yeah, well, that's been the good thing about it. That hasn't sort of been gimmicky, and they haven't had to, you know, wear different outfits or anything like that, which sometimes happens in women's sport. The other interesting point is, because I've done a few stories and interviewed a few people, and from what I can gather, until this new competition started, unless somebody like Peter Searle, you know, got her job working as an assistant coach at St Kilda, not one woman was paid at any level of women's football, coaching, playing, administering, anything. So at least up until about 2 years ago, every single woman involved in women's footy was unpaid, which you can't say of men, because even your local clubs will pay good players and they'll pay their coaches. So it's all been a labour of love for the women.
I think it's been the theme over the whole weekend is that this opens up a lot more opportunities at a higher level for women that just haven't existed before, whether it's commentary, whether it's administration, whether it's coaching, whether it's playing. I mean, these are opportunities that have not existed or have existed but not been respected enough. So,
it's fantastic.
All in all, it's not... I found it to be a great thing for the game. I'm not entirely sure why people would have anything against it, and yet there they are out there.
Predictable, isn't it? That's social media for you, isn't it? Everybody's got an opinion, and the problem's going to be now if the crowds do fall off a bit in the second and third week, then, you know, those sort of people will be out in force saying, oh, I told you so, even though it's only the first year. Like any competition like this, any business, anything that starts, you know, to be an instant success is a miracle sort of thing. So, you know, the crowds they had last year, it was just beyond everybody's, or last week, sorry, was beyond everybody's expectations. And so even if it drops off a bit, it's still a positive story.
Well, we've got a game in Perth this week, the first Women's League game at Fremantle Oval. They're expecting a lockout crowd there, apparently. That's about 10,000 people. Three games in Melbourne this weekend. A game on Friday night between the Bulldogs and Adelaide, which is probably the match of the round, really. Mm. And so some impressive sides there in terms of goal-kicking and ability, and hopefully some dry weather so we can see what Erin Phillips and Sarah Perkins can do in some dry weather.
Yeah, and then there's a double header at Icon Park on Saturday. The Melbourne game and the Collingwood game are both going to be played on the same day at the same venue now, which will be interesting to see.
It's going to be interesting to see. It's going to be interesting if people actually go home. There's 3 hours, well, 2.5 hours between the finish time of the Carlton and GWS game and the Collingwood and Melbourne game at Princess Park, and the league will be banking on people going home between the two, and I'm not sure that as many people are going to go home as you might think. So,
yeah, that'll be interesting. I didn't realise there was such a big gap in between the two games, but I'm hoping to get along to at least one of those two, and I would have thought, given the crowds last week, you would have to turn up to the first one, wouldn't you? Because if you didn't, and it's full and everybody stays, you won't get into the second one.
Well, the league might be hoping that, because I think GWS doesn't have a lot of latent support in the first place. I mean, there was a big part of last Friday night's crowd was that it was Carlton Collingwood, which was done by design. But there was a lot of there was also a lot of neutral support, whereas there's a lot of plus the sense of occasion that brought that up to that 24,000 plus a couple of thousand that were locked out. Whether that can translate through to this weekend. And as you said, the crowds are likely to come down slightly over the next couple of weeks regardless because, you know, the opener's been, the initial excitement will wear off at some point. But it's keeping the interest going for most of the people that are still going to attend, and whether, you know, that can, whether we start seeing that dwindle off a bit when the games start being played in front of 2,000 or 3,000 people in Brisbane or Canberra.
Mm. You can't underestimate the Melbourne football public, though, because the crowds that, you know, traditionally we've got in Melbourne are fantastic, you know, men's games as well. So I think that's been reflected in people turning up, like we do just turn up to sport down here. So, you know, I'm hoping that the crowds do stay good because you'll get the supporters of those teams. And with the GWS side, you'll have, you know, people like me there who go for Richmond or another team that isn't represented, so they'll go to any game just to see it. So I'm hoping that people will turn up anyway, you know, just to see, you know, how good they are, and just where they've come. It's just amazing to see how much more coverage it's getting. I don't know about in Adelaide, but here it's just been getting saturation coverage in the newspapers, even to the point where people are starting to complain about it. That's really good to see.
Well, that's the other thing. I don't understand the complaint that it's getting more coverage than it deserves. Like, we're 20 years behind on this, and people are watching in their droves. Like, 1.8 million people watch it on TV on the weekend. You had 50,000 people actually go to the games. I'm not sure that coverage can be called unwarranted at this point. It was a massive draw card.
Yeah, and you had your typical commentators like, you know, Steve Price and the dollar quote radio people saying, oh, it's going to be a failure and it's going to be hopeless, and they've already had to sort of eat their words to a point, but they'll just be sort of hanging out for the crowds to go down so they can then, you know, start bagging it. But I think the people who have, you know, taken the bull by the horns and done this really need credit, and one of those would have to be Gillon McLachlan, because before he started talking about this, there was very little money given to the women's side of it. I remember a point probably maybe 6 or 7 years ago where someone told me that the AFL literally gave the women's game like $15,000 a year or something absolutely ridiculous. And Susan Alberti came in and she was the first person to really give them money. I forget what she gave them, but maybe $20,000 a year or something like that. That was all they used to get. And then Gillon McLachlan, and I'm sure whoever else is working behind the scenes with him, has made that decision, right, we're going to make this a priority, and they've just done it so well. I think they really need credit for this.
I think this is McLachlan's expansion moment. Like Demetrio had his GWS and Gold Coast thing, and I think this is McLachlan's baby.
Yeah, it's true to a point, but at least what he's doing, you know, I know there's a little bit of self-interest in all these moves and you want your legacy and all this sort of stuff, but what he's doing is representing half of the population. You can argue that, you know, GWS is in an area that's not a traditional football supporting city. There's already a team there. You know, there's all these to and fro arguments about whether you put a team in Western Sydney, but women are half the population. So, you know, you can't go wrong, can you?
Well, it's like McLachlan said, at this point now, it finally feels like the AFL represents everybody.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, I felt like an outsider when it came to football, because I remember my friends and I, we were probably in about year seven, we went to a clinic in the city, one of those primary school, you know, holiday clinics, and we were like lepers. And I clearly remember Brian Taylor just looked at us like we were aliens. But Robbie Flower, you know, Melbourne great, late and great Robbie Flower, he was such a gentleman to us. He was so nice, and he gave us these little plastic footies, and he clearly thought, oh, this is so good, these girls have turned up. And we were the only girls in this massive paddock of kids. And just to see how things have changed since then, it's just absolutely amazing.
Just before we finish up, how do you think this will affect women's sport in general?
Oh, I think it can only be a positive thing, because I know they're going to probably, you know, steal a few players from other sports, but the level of attention it's getting, and hopefully in the long run the amount of money they can earn, will mean that it's great for the profile of women's sport, and it will encourage more girls to try out at the elite level, and you'll have a bigger pool of girls. So, you know, you lose a couple from basketball, someone else will come up and take their place. So I think it's just a win-win situation and a fantastic thing for footy.
Excellent. Well, Cheryl, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we wrap up?
Oh, no, I just think it will be interesting to see how it pans out, and I really hope that people continue to go to the games and watch them on TV and not just treat it like a novelty. Like, these women have put in so much hard work. They are elite athletes. They're doing a fantastic job. The game is great to watch. I'd really urge people to just keep supporting it.
Could not agree more. Cheryl, thank you very much for your time this evening.
And thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
We'd love to have you back sometime soon to talk more about women's footy.
Yeah, and hopefully my team will win a few games this year.
Hopefully not in round one. So, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. See you later.